It's Monday, September 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a late-night explosion rocks a popular New York City neighborhood.
It's eager to avoid any scandals, to avoid any threats of mass protests.
Russians head to the polls for parliamentary elections. Also ahead, the U.S. Congress is in a familiar debate, but unusual for an election year. And a moving van is taking a pop star's belongings to California. It's all on today's International Edition. An apparent bomb exploded outside of a building late Saturday in New York's Chelsea neighborhood, where some of the city's most popular restaurants and bars are located. The blast left the streets covered with glass and debris. A closed-circuit television picture showed windows being blown out of storefronts and parked cars while pedestrians ran for safety. It is not clear why the Chelsea neighborhood was targeted. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
A bomb exploding in New York is obviously an act of terrorism, but it's not linked to international terrorism. In other words, we find no ISIS connection, etc. But a bomb going off is generically a terrorist activity.
Governor Cuomo also promised increased security for New York City.
We have no reason to believe at this time that there is any further immediate threat. But just to err on the side of caution, we will be deploying close to an additional 1,000 New York State Police and National Guard people to police the bus terminals, airports, and subway stations.
The FBI is investigating a claim of responsibility for the bombing in New York City that injured 29 people. Federal and New York law enforcement officials gave no details, but New York media say the alleged bomber posted a manifesto on the Tumblr social media site under a large headline, "I am the New York bomber. I cannot live in a world where homosexuals like myself, as well as the rest of the LGBTQ community, are looked down upon by society," according to the writer, who threatened more attacks, calling Saturday's blast just the beginning, and promised to eliminate my targets. Tumblr has since taken down that post and has not made any comments. Meanwhile, all 29 people hurt in the blast are out of the hospital, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo vowed the city would not give in to terrorism.
The bottom line on this is, number one, whoever placed these bombs, we will find and they will be brought to justice. Period. You have the finest police agencies in the world when you come to New York. And we will find who planted these explosives, and they will be punished. Number two, we will not allow these type of people and these type of threats to disrupt our life in New York. That's what they want to do. We're not going to let them do it. This is freedom. This is democracy. And we're not going to allow them to take that from us.
Much of Manhattan has been especially busy with residents and tourists taking advantage of the late summer weather, and hundreds of world leaders and dignitaries are arriving this week for the United Nations General Assembly. City and federal law enforcement are also investigating an unexploded device that was found just a few blocks from the Chelsea bomb. Police say that it looks like a pressure cooker attached to a cell phone with wires in a plastic bag. Also late Saturday, in an unrelated incident more than 1,000 kilometers away in St. Cloud in the U.S. state of Minnesota, local police say 9 people were wounded in a shopping mall stabbing attack. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation is looking into the stabbings. Rick Thornton is the FBI special agent in charge.
We are currently investigating this as a potential act of terrorism. And I do say potential. There's a lot we don't know. We do not at this point in time know whether the subject was in contact with, had connections with, was inspired by a foreign terrorist organization. That's what the investigation is attempting to ascertain at this point in time.
St. Cloud law enforcement acted within 5 minutes of the first call. An off-duty police officer who was at the mall shot and killed the suspect, according to authorities. An Islamic State-run news agency said the stabbing attack was carried out by a soldier of the Islamic State. Police say all 9 victims were treated for wounds that were not life-threatening. It's time now for us to check out what people are saying about the explosions in New York City on social media. As usual, International Logistics' G. Abby Lee joins me here in Studio 22. Hi, G.
Hello, Jim. People are using hashtag Manhattan Explosion to talk about the incident online. The main debate on social media is surrounding what New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said about the explosion, and he called it an intentional act, but stopped short of calling it an act of terrorism.
Okay, so what's the controversy?
So some people are criticizing the fact that de Blasio did not use the word terrorism to describe what happened. For example, one user tweeted a meme of a confused person and wrote this: "Me trying to calculate how an explosion can be intentional, yet not terror-related." There's also a lot of buzz about a video clip on Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton's response to that explosion, and ABC reporter Liz Kruitz filmed it on Clinton's campaign plane and posted it on Twitter. Now, in the video, when a reporter asked for Clinton's response to Donald Trump calling it a bomb, she answered, "It's important to know the facts before speaking."
Okay, well, I did see the video and the replies, and it seemed like Trump supporters were arguing that he was right, whereas Clinton supporters were saying accuracy and fact-checking were important.
That's exactly it. So for more on this story, you can check out a Facebook Live video by our Steve Herman on VOA News Facebook page.
And that's different from our VOA Now page, which is at facebook.com/VOA Now. What else is trending?
Jim, hashtag social good and hashtag 2030 now are both trending online because a UN-sponsored event is now taking place in New York City. A lot happening in New York City this weekend, by the way. The two-day conference is aimed at examining the impact of technology and, of course, new media on social good initiatives around the world. And the number 2030 comes from the question posed by the United Nations Foundation that organizes the event every year. What type of world do I want to live in by the year 2030? The foundation is now working with Mashable, and you can check out the live stream at mashable.com/SGS. That stands for Social Goods Summit. Back to you, Jim.
All right. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can follow us all on Twitter on our International Edition stream. That's at @VOA_IE and also through our individual accounts at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Islamic State claims rare fatal attack on Pakistani soldiers. 17 Indian soldiers killed in militant attack in Indian Kashmir. $17 billion project proposes changing the course of Asia's Mekong River. Pakistan set to execute mentally unfit man. Mekong nations seek closer cooperation against growing drug scourge. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at our VOAnews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app if you happen to have a smartphone. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Russians are voting to choose a new parliament. Charles Maines is in Moscow for VOA.
The last time Russia held parliamentary elections, in 2011, opposition parties were banned from participating, and amid evidence of widespread vote rigging, tens of thousands took to the streets in protest, the biggest public challenge Vladimir Putin has faced in his 17 years in power. Political analyst Nikolai Petrov says the Kremlin has learned its lesson.
The Kremlin is not eager to practice large-scale fraud. It's eager to avoid any scandals, to avoid any threat of mass protests.
Kremlin officials say these elections are different. There have been raucous televised debates. A respected human rights campaigner now runs the election commission, and international observers from the OSCE are on hand to monitor the vote. There are also more parties, 15, including some led by the opposition.
Ну, вы знаете, что в этот раз власть выбрала такой способ большей имитации, что очень честная борьба предвыборная.
But a former prime minister under Putin, Mikhail Kasyanov, who leads the liberal Parnas party, calls these elections mere imitation. Despite the chance to participate, he says he and other party members have also faced routine harassment at rallies and a relentless smear campaign on state television. Meanwhile, opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been barred from participating in the race, and the 2015 murder of politician Boris Nemtsov robbed the anti-government movement of a key voice. Putin's ruling United Russia Party is expected to retain, if not expand, its hold over the Duma. Despite an economy struggling under the weight of low world oil prices and Western sanctions, Putin remains as popular as ever for his annexation of the Crimean Peninsula from neighboring Ukraine. With the opposition demoralized and the Kremlin riding high, observers say the government can simply afford more competitive elections. Charles Maines, VOA News, Moscow.
U.S. lawmakers are back in Washington, and they have about 2 weeks to agree to a spending budget for next year as the federal government's fiscal year comes to a close on September 30th. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us in the studio with a battle that's not commonly seen in a presidential election year.
Jim, here we go again. It's September, which means that the annual drama over how the government gets funded and at what levels is very much unfolding right now. The fiscal year ends September 30th at the stroke of midnight. And on October 1st, if Congress has not acted, has not appropriated funds, and the president has not signed off on that, then the government is left without any money to spend. And it can maintain emergency operations, but non-essential government, federal government activities grind to a halt. And there is always this drama because we have a very politically polarized Congress. What gets funded and can they cobble together something that can get through both houses of Congress and earn the president's signature?
It's also an election year, which adds a little bit of drama to this.
It's somewhat unusual. Typically, Congress avoids big fiscal fights during an election year. There's sort of this understanding that neither party wants to be tarred with a government shutdown when their members are running for re-election. And so this is somewhat unusual in that the big fights are usually reserved for sort of off years politically. However, there was an agreement that was signed 2 years ago that laid out sort of the fiscal roadmap for a two-year period to include this very election year. And after a while, it was decided by Republicans that they weren't very happy with the restrictions on military spending. And Democrats said, well, come to think of it, we're not all that thrilled with the restrictions on domestic spending. So there was this idea that maybe they would break the budget caps in some way. And the fight right now is, well, Republicans would very much like to boost up the military portion, and Democrats say, well, absolutely, but if we're going to do that, let's have more for roads and bridges and education and health initiatives and what have you. Republicans say not so fast. So that's sort of the rub, and this comes at a time when Uncle Sam has literally zero appropriated funds specifically designated to fight the Zika virus. There are some real challenges to be tackled here.
Something on the order of a government shutdown would not sit well right before the election. It would be fresh in voters' minds.
The conventional wisdom is, and some Republicans would disagree with this, but that the conventional wisdom has been that in recent memory, it's been the Republicans who have spoiled for shutdowns. However, they have chosen these shutdowns normally on years when there isn't an election. As a result, something very interesting has happened. The following year, by and large, Republicans have not been punished for a shutdown that occurred the previous year. Americans have very short memories when it comes to these sorts of things, and by the time November of the following year rolls around, it's largely forgotten. No one knows how this would play out if it occurred in the beginning of October, literally 5 weeks before Americans chose the next president and chose which party controls Congress. But the old days where things were, where there was a year-long appropriations process and the American people could weigh in, they could see the bill being formulated and they could weigh in, I'm afraid that that's a bit of yesteryear, and I don't know if or when that will ever come back.
There is one thing on Capitol Hill that does operate year-long, and it is an orderly process, and that is great reporting from our VOA Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Jim.
Whether it's Congress or the presidential election, which will take place November 8th, or a whole host of other stories, you can follow everything at our website, voanews.com. And be sure to follow our Twitter stream at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. Music and Los Angeles have gone together quite well for many decades. The big city, though, does have some room for another superstar, as VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins us to explain.
There's a fire starting in my heart.
Another big name moving to L.A.
Yes, and that's not the only change going on in the life of Adele. She is currently on a world tour in support of her 25 album, and this is her first tour in 5 years. So people were really primed to see Adele, but they may have to wait twice as long for her next trip. Now, Adele's current tour started in February. It ends in November after more than 100 shows. But a source tells the London Sun that right now, Adele's top priority is her 3-year-old son, Angelo. She takes Angelo with her on the road, but next year he's going to start going to preschool, and that's going to make things a little more difficult. So Adele is reportedly considering taking a 10-year break from touring.
Wow, that's
to
major.
Be a mom. To be a full-time mom. Now, the Sun reports, the London Sun, that is, that Adele could change her mind about touring if she gets a Las Vegas-style residency. Now, some other major singing stars turned moms have found this to be very workable. People like Britney Spears, Jennifer Lopez, and Celine Dion. I mean, you are in the same spot for long periods of time, so there aren't any touring considerations to worry about. Also, Adele looks like she may be shifting her home. She and her partner Simon Konecki, along with Angelo, recently bought a $7 million mansion up in the Hollywood Hills. Adele apparently likes Southern California a whole lot. And she said originally her intention was to stay there for about 8 months and experience Christmas in Southern California, something that she said they all would love to do. Well, Adele apparently loves the L.A. area so much that she's looking into schools for Angelo, and she's thinking of permanently relocating. She has sold her townhouse back in England, so it looks like Adele is getting set to move into her mansion high in the Hollywood Hills and maybe not to leave it for 10 years or so.
Well, she'll definitely have a lot of company in the area, and presumably while her son is at school, perhaps she might do some recording.
Well, yeah, and there's also a huge British expatriate community in Southern California. Reportedly, one of her best friends in Los Angeles is the wife of Robbie Williams, who is also a huge British star who now lives in L.A. at least part of the year.
All right.
So welcome to L.A., Adele.
Her next album will not be 35. We'll have a lower number for that.
Yeah, she said she's done with numerically titled albums.
Okay.
You know, she's her age, she says, it's irrelevant now, so who knows what her next album is going to be called.
Well, maybe she'll start with her son's age or go with something else.
The possibilities are endless.
Well, she's always number one, at least with us, and number 20 is the magic number for Ray McDonald. He's our VOA Top 20 countdown each and every week.
Every Thursday on VOA 1.
And follow him on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition, and there's so many ways to follow us in addition to listening to us. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com. You can check us out on Facebook. VOA Now is the place to go. And be sure to follow our Twitter stream at @VOA_IE. Thanks so much for joining us. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have an absolutely wonderful day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Assistant United States Trade Representative for South Asia, Michael Delaney, recently led a delegation to Islamabad to discuss the ongoing U.S.-Pakistan Trade and Investment Framework Agreement, known as TIFA, with members of the government of Pakistan. The intersessional meeting, hosted by the Ministry of Commerce, covered a broad range of trade and investment-related issues, including expanded market access for Pakistani goods in the United States, business-to-business ties, intellectual property, and progress on the Augmented Joint Action Plan for Trade and Investment, as agreed by President Barack Obama and Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif during the Prime Minister's October 2015 visit to Washington, D.C. Mr. Delaney met with members of the government of Pakistan and discussed issues of bilateral interest. During his meetings, Trade Representative Delaney emphasized that the United States remains committed to working with the Pakistani government and private sector to enhance bilateral trade and investment ties. The United States is the largest destination for Pakistani exports and is one of the country's primary sources of foreign direct investment. And, in 2015, bilateral trade between Pakistan and the U.S. surpassed $5.5 billion. The U.S.-Pakistan TIFA provides a strategic framework and principles for dialogue on trade and investment issues between the two nations. Pakistan and the United States share a relationship based increasingly on trade and investment and have a 5-year action plan to continue to do so, Trade Representative Delaney said. The United States sees Pakistan's prosperity as good for the region and good for the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.